She penciled liner over her eyebrows. "I'm going to Marie's house this morning. I was hoping you'd go with me." Lily turned from the mirror and faced Danielle. "Marie's? What for?" "I'll explain in the car." Danielle gestured to the attic. Lily glanced up at the ceiling. "Okay, sounds interesting. Where is Walt, by the way?" "The attic, maybe. I haven't seen him this morning." "And Walt never said anything?" Lily asked as she snapped on her seatbelt. She sat in the passenger seat of the red Ford Flex as Danielle backed the vehicle down the driveway. "Yesterday, when I told him about the wreckage, I mentioned its name. He said nothing." "Maybe he didn't make the connection. It has been almost 100 years, Lily suggested. "Oh, come on. Like Walt isn't going to remember the name of his yacht? One he named for the love of his life?" Lily stared at Marlowe House as Danielle pulled out onto the street. "I just can't figure out why he'd lie about something like this." "He was interested when I first told him what had washed up on the beach. In fact, when I got to the attic, he was watching all the commotion through his spotting scope and was trying to get Max to go see what was going on. But the moment I mention the name of the boat, he loses all interest. Or so it seemed. Even said something about it not being necessary to dredge up old memories." "Well, there you have it. Something about Eva Aphrodite is too painful for him to think about. And didn't you tell me they found human remains on board?" "According to Brian, they were skeletal remains, which leads one to believe they've been on the boat since it obviously went missing. Those were probably people Walt knew." "Then, Lily, wouldn't that make Walt more curious about the wreckage?" "Adam brought the cinnamon rolls. Wasn't that sweet of him?" Marie explained as she set a plate of pastries on the center of the kitchen table and passed napkins to Lily and Danielle. Danielle gazed longingly at the frosted rolls. "Not from Old Salt's Bakery?" "Where else?" Adam said with a grin as he snatched one from the plate and took a bite. He sat at the kitchen table with Lily, Danielle, and his grandmother. Succumbing to temptation, Danielle took a roll. "My scale hates you," she grumbled. Adam laughed and took another bite. "I think you can afford a few extra calories." Chewing slowly, Danielle closed her eyes for a moment, savoring the treat. "They really do bake the best cinnamon rolls."
"Yes, they do," Marie agreed.
"So what is this about that boat belonging to Walt Marlowe?" Lily asked. Marie took a sip of her coffee before answering. "He had it built before he sold his grandfather's shipping company and they moved everything out of Frederickport. He named it for Eva Thorndike. Of course, she had already died by then."
"Doesn't the Frederickport Police Department already know this?" Danielle asked.
"Adam said you wanted to talk to me about it before you went to the police department."
"Why would they? The Eva Aphrodite sank almost 100 years ago, or at least everyone assumed it sank, considering the storm."
"It went down in a storm?" Lily asked.
"Oh, yes," Marie nodded. "According to my father, it was one of the worst storms he could remember. Came out of nowhere. They never found any wreckage of the ship, at least not until yesterday. Everyone always assumed it went down in the storm."
"I suppose that explains the human remains they found on board," Danielle said. Marie picked up a roll and tore it in half.
"Yes, I read that in the paper."
"Why wasn't Walt Marlowe on board?" Lily asked. "If it was his yacht." Marie chuckled.
"It was all part of Marlowe's moonshine enterprise."
"Moonshine?" Lily asked curiously.
"I remember you mentioning that once," Danielle said. "When we first met, you said something about
Walt running moonshine. Marie leaned across the table and patted Danielle's hand.
That's so sweet how you call him Walt, as if you really knew him.
Adam eyed Danielle critically as he chewed another bite of his roll.
Yeah, you do act like you knew him, he mumbled under his breath.
Danielle shrugged.
It's just that I live in his house, where he lived, where he died.
I want to hear more about this moonshining, Lily said.
This was during Prohibition, Marie explained. Actually, Oregon went dry before the 18th Amendment became law.
I didn't realize that, Danielle said.
You can thank women for the passage of Prohibition, Adam grumbled. That's what happens when you let women vote.
Marie playfully batted her grandson's arm.
Oh, hush, Adam.
It's true. You told me yourself. If women hadn't won the right to vote, Prohibition would never have been passed, Adam reminded her.
Technically speaking, the 18th Amendment bringing Prohibition was passed before women got the right to vote, Lily said with a cheeky grin.
You know, 18 comes before 19.
You're only talking about nationally. Women could already vote in Oregon, and if it wasn't for them, Prohibition probably wouldn't have been passed, Adam reminded her.
Lily tore a roll in half. Pesky details.
I remember when I first heard that, Danielle began. I thought, gee, makes women look bad pushing through something like Prohibition that just created more problems and ended up getting repealed. But then I looked at the big picture.
What's that? Adam asked.
Back then, a married woman really had no rights, no protection from her husband. It was probably much worse for a poor woman saddled with a drunk. He could freely spend all their money tying one on, then come home and beat the crap out of her. Divorce wasn't an easy option. I imagine suddenly having the power to close the saloons by simply casting a ballot was empowering for those women, Danielle explained.
So true, Marie agreed.
Young women these days have no idea how lucky they now have it.
And it wasn't just women voters, Lily spoke up.
From what I learned when Ian was researching the Emma Jackson story, the KKK was a big supporter of Prohibition.
And why was that? Adam asked.
It was because of the Catholics, Irish, and Italians, Marie told Adam. The KKK didn't just target blacks. They went after other minorities.
True, Danielle agreed. It was a way to target certain groups.
I want to know what any of this has to do with the Eva Aphrodite, Lily said.
Oh, it's quite simple, really, Marie explained. The Eva Aphrodite was often used to transport Walt's friends and customers out to the booze ships.
What's a booze ship? Danielle asked.
My father would call them party ships. Mother called them booze ships. They would come down from Canada and park in international waters.
Ah, and people could drink on them, Danielle said. I think I've heard about that.
Adam chuckled. Floating nightclubs.
Exactly, Marie nodded. According to my father, Walt Marlowe would occasionally host private parties aboard his yacht, where he would supply the liquor. But mostly he would use the Eva Aphrodite to ferry his clients out to the larger ships that would come down from Canada.
When it sank, was that what it was doing? Taking passengers out to international waters to meet up with a booze ship? Danielle asked.
According to my father, yes.
Wouldn't the local museum have information on this? Lily asked.
Hardly, Marie snorted. They have a lot on the Marlowe shipping line, but not much about the grandson. And if you ask me, Walt Marlowe was a more colorful character.
He didn't have such a terrific end, Adam reminded her as he wiped his sticky hands off on a napkin. So what all did your father tell you about Walt's yacht going down? Danielle asked.
I just remember my father saying it was a bad time for Walt. The passengers were friends of his, quite prominent members of the community. And then his best friend and business partner stole all that money and just took off.
What best friend and business partner? Danielle asked.
Oh, I didn't tell you about that? Marie asked.
6. A previous customer had abandoned the morning newspaper on the empty chair next to Kurt Jefferson. He didn't notice it until after the waitress had taken his lunch order. Alone at the diner's table, he picked up the newspaper and skimmed through it while waiting for his food. The photograph accompanying the front page article caught his eye. Something about it looked familiar. Curious, he read the paper. Finishing the article, he gripped the edges of the newspaper, crushing it. Taking a deep breath, he reread the article. This is impossible, he told himself. After reading the article two more times, he set the newspaper on the tabletop, picked up his cell phone, and made a call. Hey, came the female voice on the other end of the line.
Do you know anything about that wreckage that washed up in Frederickport? He asked.
Yes, I was just getting ready to call you, she told him.
This is bizarre. According to the article, the boat's name is Eva Aphrodite, and I swear, looking at this picture, it could almost be the same one.
I think it is, she told him.
That's impossible. That boat wasn't going anywhere.
I saw it, Kurt. I was down at the beach yesterday morning. Oh, I think half of Frederickport was down there. I'm sure it's the same one.
How would you know? You never saw it.
It's just a gut feeling I have. And didn't you just say it looked like it could be the same one? She asked.
I just think it's a bizarre coincidence, he told her, because of the name.
I was going to call you because I wanted you to look at the photograph, see what you thought. I couldn't really go by the wreckage since I never actually saw it.
Even if it has the same name, how could you even jump to that conclusion it's the same boat? Especially if, as you say, you never saw the other one.
Like I said, a gut feeling.
With a snort, he said, I know all about your gut feelings.
Hey, you called me about it, she reminded him.
I admit it looks like it could be the same boat. And the name, well, that's just freaking bizarre. But I don't see how it's even possible.
Stranger things have happened, Kurt.
You certainly don't seem upset. I figured you'd be upset, especially if you think it could be the same boat. Which I'm not convinced it is. I think it's just some freaking coincidence.
Why would I be upset?
Considering all the trouble we went to.
If you read the article, I guess you know they found the bodies. Or what was left of them.
I have to admit, that does make it look like it could be the same boat.
I think it is, she said calmly.
Let's assume you're right. How did it get to Frederickport?
I think it's what we did, she said.
Now you're just being crazy.
Doesn't mean I'm not right. Danielle found Walt in the attic when she returned home from Marie's house. She had dropped Lily off at Ian's before pulling into the driveway just minutes earlier.
Why didn't you tell me? She asked.
He turned from the spotting scope and looked at her.
Tell you what?
That the boat was yours. With a sigh, Walt walked to the sofa and sat down. He looked over at Danielle.
Where were you this morning?
Marie's house. She called, wanted to talk to me about the wreckage. With a wave of his hand, Walt summoned a lit cigar. He took a drag and then said,
I tend to forget what a busybody little Marie grew up to be.
Danielle walked to the sofa and sat next to Walt. With a concerned frown, she asked, Why wouldn't you tell me? What's the big secret?
Walt shrugged. It was just a time in my life I'd rather forget.
Were they your friends? Danielle asked. Or customers?
Walt cocked his brow and studied Danielle.
So she told you about that, too?
That you used your boat to ferry people out to the booze ships?
Yeah.
People needed a little fun after all that had happened.
Walt puffed on his cigar.
What do you mean? What had happened?
I always thought it ironic federal prohibition went into effect a year after the war ended, and just months after people stopped dying from influenza. If anyone needed a drink, this country did. Of course, Oregon went dry a few years before the rest of the country. I think I was around 16 at the time.
That's right, World War I. The war to end all wars, Danielle quipped.
Walt let out a sardonic chuckle.
According to your History Channel I've been watching, that obviously didn't work out.
Were you in the war?
Danielle silently waited for his answer. She wondered why they had never discussed this before.
Eva died in April, a couple weeks after the country entered the war, Walt explained. 1917. I was determined to enlist. Looking back, it had nothing to do with being patriotic.
Your heart was broken, losing Eva, she whispered.
Walt smiled softly.
I suppose I was. Of course, Grandfather wouldn't hear of it. Insisted he needed me to help him with the shipping company, especially with the war going on and new demands placed on the family business.
Didn't they have the draft? Danielle asked. Did your grandfather fix it so you didn't have to serve?
About a month after we entered the war, they passed the Selective Service Act. Of course, that didn't apply to me. I was only 18 at the time.
I thought that draft applied to 18-year-old males.
Walt shook his head.
Initially, it only applied to men 21 to 31. There was a third registration the following year where it would have applied to me. But that was in the fall, and by that time I was already sick with influenza.
You're not talking about the pandemic I've read about, Danielle asked.
It's interesting, watching documentaries about all that now, almost 100 years later. But yes, the same one. I became ill in September of 1918, although most people didn't even realize there was an epidemic here. Reports started coming in the following month. I almost died. I was sick for quite a while.
Walt, I never knew. I always heard the pandemic was especially hard on healthy males. You were lucky.
Unfortunately, my grandfather wasn't.
Are you saying your grandfather died during the pandemic?
Walt nodded.
The war had ended. I was starting to feel better. My grandfather got sick, and within hours he was gone. I always thought it so strange, considering he was around me during my illness and seemed fine through it.
What about your grandmother? Danielle asked.
She was already gone. And here I was, barely 21, the sole owner of a shipping company, and all alone.
That must have been terrifying.
Walt shrugged. I decided to sell the company, which didn't make me especially popular at the time, since they moved the entire company out of Frederickport, and with it, jobs. But I didn't want to run the shipping company. I'd already lost the woman I loved, my last family member, and almost lost my own life. I decided time on this earth was short, and I was determined to enjoy it. Plus, they offered me a considerable sum to sell.
So you got involved with party boats?
Walt smiled at Danielle.
Not right away. After I sold the company, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. Money wasn't an issue. Traveled abroad for about a year, and when I came home, I found the brown they were peddling was barely worth drinking.
Danielle frowned.
Brown?
Whiskey. Anyway, I was getting bored about that time, so a friend and I worked out a deal with a couple fellas we knew from Canada. I still owned the Eva Aphrodite,
so we used her to import some first-class moonshine. One thing led to another, and I started hosting parties on the boat.
"Weren't you afraid of getting arrested?" Danielle asked.
"We were okay, as long as we were in international waters, but that didn't protect us when transporting the hooch from Frederickport. Got boarded one time, but managed to toss the booze before they got too close. After that, Jack and I decided to stick more to ferrying our customers out to the party boats rather than hosting parties ourselves."
"Jack? Who's Jack?"
"Someone who I thought was my best friend, but turned out to be nothing but a piker."
"Marie mentioned something about a friend of yours taking off with some money around the same time that the Eva Aphrodite went down."
Walt stood up and shook his head, a fresh cigar appearing in his hand. "I can't believe her father told her all that."
"Is Jack the one she's talking about?"
Walt nodded and walked to the window. "We had a nice little thing going on." Placing his hands on the windowsill, he gazed outside. "If he needed the money, all he had to do was ask me. It's not like I was doing it for the kale."
"Kale?" Walt chuckled.
"Money. I wasn't doing it for the money."
"Why were you doing it?" she asked in a soft voice.
He shrugged. "For the hell of it, I suppose."
"How much did Jack take off with?"
"It was a couple thousand, from what I recall. I let Jack handle the money. My first mistake."
"Marie said something about Jack staying with her parents at the time."
Walt turned from the window and faced Danielle. "Yeah, Jack was renting a room from George. He was keeping our money over there, and I told him he needed to move it. I didn't think it was safe to keep it there."
"You didn't trust Marie's dad?"
"Just the opposite. People knew what was going on. It was an open secret. If someone realized Jack was keeping the money at George's, it wouldn't be safe for George and his family. I told Jack to bring it over to Marlowe House. He gave me some excuse, promised he'd bring it over, and the next thing I know, he's vanished from George's, along with the money."
"Did you try looking for him?"
"He was seeing this little Sheba from town. She lived with her aunt and uncle in a broken-down motel that used to be on the south side of town. I checked there, but she was gone, too. Pretty obvious to me the two had taken off together. But then I got news the Eva Aphrodite had never arrived at the party ship. It was no longer important to look for Jack. Figured I really didn't want to find him."
"Marie said there had been a bad storm that night."
"Yes. But there had been storms before, and she was seaworthy and had a good crew. But we sent out rescue boats. Never found a trace of her. At least, not until yesterday."
"Do you have any idea who the spirit I saw might have been?" Walt faced Danielle. His cigar disappeared. He crossed his arms over his chest.
"I know exactly who it was. It was Jack."
Danielle frowned. "Jack? Why do you say that?"
"For one reason. He paid me a visit yesterday."
"Jack? Your friend that double-crossed you? He was here? Yesterday?"
"At least his ghost was."
"Okay, maybe you did see Jack, but what makes you think that's the spirit I saw?"
"Jack was wearing a dark blue pinstriped suit."
Danielle stared at Walt for a moment before responding. "If you're right, why was he with the wreckage? Didn't you just say he took off with his girlfriend? Are you saying you now think he might have been on the boat instead?"
Walt shook his head. "No, Jack wasn't on that boat. But considering what can bind spirits to this realm. My dear wife at the local cemetery. Darlene at Pilgrim's Point. That annoying little twerp at Presley House. Perhaps Jack's eternity is in some way tied to the Eva Aphrodite. The ship he profited and stole from."
7. Danielle silently considered all that Walt had told her. Finally, she asked,
"Do you know why he's here?"
"I don't care why he's here. I told him to leave." Walt turned back to the window.
"What about the people who died on the boat? You never answered my question. Were they friends of yours?"
Walt sighed wearily. "Some were. But what does that have to do with anything?"
"There must be some reason your boat washed up on shore.
Some reason Jack showed up when he did." "What do you want me to do?"
"I don't know. Maybe listen to Jack the next time you see him. Find out what he has to say."
"I doubt I'll see him again."
Danielle studied Walt for a moment. "If he came back, would you talk to him? See what he has to say?"
Walt shrugged. "I suppose. Perhaps I shouldn't have been so abrupt with him. It was just a shock. He was the last one I expected to see."
"Okay, then." Danielle started walking toward the door.
"Where are you going?"
"Where do you think? Back to the beach, of course. If he's still lingering around, my bet is he's down by the boat."
Max was walking toward the attic stairs when Danielle reached the second floor landing. She paused a moment and picked up the cat, giving him an affectionate snuggle.
"Where have you been hiding out?"
Danielle rubbed the side of her face against Max's fur. She could hear his loud purr. After giving the top of his head a quick kiss, she set him on the floor and told him, "Walt's in the attic." With a swish of his tail, the black cat sauntered up the attic stairs, not looking back. Danielle watched him for a moment, noticing the way the white tips of his ears twitched slightly. Danielle continued on her way downstairs. She stopped at the coat rack in the front hall and grabbed a light jacket, slipping it on. Just as she opened the front door, her cell phone began to ring. She pulled it from her pocket and looked at it. Chris was calling. Before answering the phone, she glanced up at the ceiling, wondering if Walt was still standing at the attic window, waiting to watch her walk down the street. Answering the phone, she stepped outside, closing the door behind her. "How's Chicago?" she asked, as she started down the walkway toward the street.
"Hectic. I was wondering, find out anything about the mystery boat?" Chris asked.
The night before, Danielle had talked to Chris on the phone, telling him about the wreckage not far from his house and about the spirit she had seen.
"You could say that."
Holding the phone to her ear, she glanced up at the attic. Walt stood by the window, watching her. Continuing down the street, Danielle turned her back to Walt and proceeded to tell Chris all that she had learned about the Eva Aphrodite.
"I wish I was there to help you," Chris said after she finished.
"I wish you were, too."
"Do you?"
Danielle could imagine Chris's teasing grin as he asked the question.
"I could always use help with this new spirit."
"You could ask Heather for help," Chris suggested.
"Now you're just being mean. She was down there, by the way."
"Yeah, you mentioned she was there."
"As was everyone from our street. Almost looked like a block party." Danielle heard another voice on the phone. Someone was calling for Chris.
"I'm sorry, Danielle, I have to cut this short. The meeting is about to start. They need me in there."
"Next time, why don't you just send them a check?"
she suggested.
Chris laughed again. "That might be a good idea."
By the time Danielle was off the phone, she was by Chris's house. She noticed there were two police cars parked on the side of the road. When she stepped onto the beach, she saw Joe Morelli, Brian Henderson, and Police Chief McDonald. She also noticed the crime tape continued to encircle the yacht. Joe's and McDonald's backs were to her, but Brian saw her coming.
"Office meeting at the beach?" Danielle called out.
Joe and the chief turned toward her.
"Afternoon, Danielle," the chief greeted her.
"Did you talk to Marie yet?" Danielle asked when she reached them.
"Yes, I was just telling Joe and Brian about it," McDonald explained.
"So I guess this boat is your problem," Brian chuckled.
Danielle frowned. My problem? How do you figure? You're basically Walt Marlowe's heir, so it stands to reason his yacht now belongs to you, along with the cost of hauling it off.
Danielle looked at the chief.
Is that true?
MacDonald shrugged and flashed her a grin. I've no idea, but it makes for interesting speculation. And then there's the matter of the human remains, Brian went on.
Now wait a minute. Danielle started to laugh. I knew you'd find some way to drag me into this.
Considering your history, can you really blame me? Brian teased. I don't know why any of you find this funny, Joe snapped.
Oh, lighten up, Joe, Brian told him. You have to admit it's rather amusing.
I don't think those poor people found it terribly amusing being executed, Joe snapped.
How long ago? Almost 100 years, Brian countered. Even if they all died of old age, they'd be dead by now.
What are you talking about? Danielle interrupted. Who was executed?
The three officers exchanged knowing glances. The chief sighed and said,
We'd rather this not get out right now.
What are you talking about? Danielle asked.
The people we found who died on that boat.
What's left of them? Brian interrupted the chief.
True, the chief continued. But they didn't drown. They were murdered.
How could you tell that? If there's only skeletal remains, you can't do an autopsy. Can you? Danielle asked.
We haven't gone through the entire boat yet, but yesterday we removed what remains we found, which mostly amounted to 7 skulls. Each one had a bullet lodged in it, the chief told her.
Danielle frowned. That's impossible. According to what... Marie, the boat went down in a storm. Everyone drowned.
Brian shook his head.
Maybe there was a storm, but the remains we took off the boat. Those people were murdered.
What are you going to do now? She asked.
We're making arrangements to have some lighting brought down so we can do a more thorough search. In the meantime, we're going to have another look inside to see what we're going to need, the chief explained.
Danielle looked at the wreckage. Is it safe?
I think so.
The chief looked at Brian and Joe.
Why don't you two go ahead and start without me? I'd like to talk to Danielle alone.
I expected to find half of Frederickport crawling all over the boat when I got down here, Danielle told the chief when they were alone on the beach.
We had a guard on the boat all night.
Guard?
We didn't want anyone tampering with the evidence. A few people showed up this morning, but after they realized they couldn't go beyond the tape, most just took a few pictures before moving on.
Evidence?
Technically speaking, it's a crime scene.
You think I might really be responsible for hauling that thing off? Danielle asked.
Don't worry about that now. I'm more concerned about you living in the same house with Walt.
Walt? What are you talking about?
After Marie called, I went down to the museum and had a little talk with Ben Smith and looked through some of the old Frederickport papers they have on file for that era.
What does that have to do with Walt?
Smith seems to think Walt Marlowe may have had those people killed.
What are you talking about? Danielle asked angrily.
Obviously, Walt is dead. You might say, out of my jurisdiction. But that doesn't mean I can't be worried about you living under the same roof with his spirit.
Chief, you know Walt. He's a good guy.
I can't say I know Walt. I've been witness to his levitations.
Danielle couldn't resist giggling. You're saying you've seen him fly?
The chief flashed her a rebuking frown.
I meant the way he skillfully levitates objects. I'm concerned for your safety. When Stoddard decided to haunt you, he wanted nothing more than to physically harm you, but thankfully he hadn't been able to. What is it you call it?
harness his energy. But Walt, he's rather adept at harnessing his energy. I remember how he almost killed Renton.
Yes, to save my life.
But what happens if something provokes him? Jealousy, perhaps?
Jealousy?
From how Chris talks, I get the impression he and Walt tend to compete for your attention.
This is ridiculous, Danielle said impatiently.
Is it? If Walt Marlowe was capable of executing those people, or having them executed, who's to say he might not do something like that again? What happens if he gets jealous of Chris and decides to bring you to his side?
Are you suggesting Walt might kill me, so I can join him as a ghost? Danielle didn't know if she should laugh or get angry at the chief's suggestion.
I just think you and Lily should consider staying somewhere else until we figure this thing out, for your own protection.
How is that going to help?
You told me yourself, Walt can't leave Marlowe House. And once you suggested if he ever managed to, he probably wouldn't be able to harness his energy as he can there. So what would it hurt? You can afford it. Stay somewhere else while we investigate the murders.
I don't believe for a moment Walt killed those people. I know Walt. I trust him. And I know he cares about me. About Lily.
Then you won't even consider my suggestion?
No.
Don't you think you at least owe it to Lily to give her the option to stay at a safe place while we investigate the murder? She could stay with Ian.
Why would Walt hurt Lily? I thought you just said I was in danger because he might go into a jealous rage over Chris, she snapped.
The chief wore an expression devoid of humor. If he was capable of executing those people, he is capable of anything.
Angry, Danielle turned from the chief and looked at the wreckage. Walking on the top deck of the Eva Aphrodite was Walt's old friend Jack. There's someone who might be able to shed some light on the situation, Danielle said angrily. The chief looked at the ship. He didn't see anyone. Joe and Brian were already inside the boat, out of sight.
What are you talking about?
8. The Eva Aphrodite came with a ghost, Danielle explained.
You see something? The chief asked.
Danielle pointed to the top deck. He's up there. Of course, I don't expect you to see him, but he's wearing a dark blue pinstriped suit circa 1920. His name is Jack.
You've already talked to him.
Danielle shook her head. No, I noticed him yesterday morning when I first saw the boat. He was up where he is now and then vanished. According to Walt, he was at the house yesterday. They talked briefly and then he disappeared.
I wonder if other spirits are here, considering the remains we found on board. Or perhaps they went to the coroner's office, McDonald suggested.
According to Walt, Jack wasn't aboard the Eva Aphrodite when it went down. He and Walt were partners in a business venture. They used the yacht to ferry people out to the booze ships during Prohibition. Jack took off around the time the ship went down, taking all the money from the business venture with them. Walt believes Jack's spirit is drawn to the Eva Aphrodite. When the boat landed on shore, it might have lured Jack's spirit out from wherever he was previously haunting.
Perhaps Jack was the one who did the hits for Walt.
Would you stop saying that? Danielle snapped. Walt didn't kill those people, and as far as I know, Jack's only crimes were embezzlement and betraying his best friend.
I'd rather you communicate with the spirits of those poor souls who were murdered on that boat. I imagine they'd be able to tell you what really happened out there and who was responsible.
I don't believe they're here. I think I would have seen something already. And since I don't do seances, Jack will have to do.
As long as Joe and Brian are on the boat, you can't very well go up there and introduce yourself.
Looking back up to the upper portion of the wreckage, Danielle narrowed her eyes and studied Jack. He paced the upper deck as if agitated.
For a brief moment, she contemplated waving at him, seeing if she could coax him off the boat and onto the beach with her. Then she thought of Brian and Joe and feared they'd exit the boat at an inconvenient time. "How long do you think Brian and Joe will be in there?" Danielle asked.
"You want to wait until they leave so you can talk to your ghost?"
"His name is Jack, and he's not my ghost. But yeah, I'd like to do that."
"I tell you what, why don't you go home and let me get to work? When we're done, I'll send Joe and Brian back to the station. I'll give you a call, let you know when they're gone. It will be at least an hour."
"Are you planning to leave anyone down here to keep guarding this thing?"
"Until we're done, yes. But I'll make some excuse and stay down here while you have your conversation."
Danielle glanced briefly back to the upper deck of the wreckage and at the ghost now looking down at her. "Okay, I just hope he's still there when I come back." When Danielle started to walk away, the chief called out,
"Danielle, please be careful."
Pausing a moment, she looked back at the chief and flashed him a frown. "I'll be fine. I don't know what Ben told you, but he was wrong about Walt." Gripping the flashlight, McDonald moved its beam along the interior of the dismal cabin. The scent of seawater and rotting wood filled his nostrils. Joe explored the adjacent cabin while Brian stood just a few feet from McDonald.
"None of the theories on this thing make any sense," Brian said.
"What do you mean?"
the chief asked. "According to one of the guys I talked to from the Coast Guard, this thing was probably a ghost ship, floating around for almost 100 years until it landed back here."
The chief continued to move his light around the small space.
"I've heard of ghost ships. What about that hole in the stern? Looks like someone took an axe to it. I don't see how water wouldn't have come in that way. And where are the rest of the skeletal remains? I would assume being underwater and exposed to sea life would assist in their decomposition. But would that be the case for a ship floating around for almost 100 years? Brian asked.
Focusing his light on a brass lamp still attached to the wall, the chief said,
"By the looks of those barnacles, I'd have to agree with you. I'm no expert, but it seems as if this ship was once underwater, and for a long time. I suppose it could have landed somewhere and been swamped, virtually underwater, and then somehow got unstuck and ended up here. But that still doesn't explain that hole."
Before the chief could respond, they heard Joe shout out from the adjoining cabin.
"I found something!"
When Brian and McDonald joined Joe, they found him kneeling on the floor, shining a light on what appeared to be a metal box. What they didn't see was Jack, who leaned against the side wall, his arms casually crossed, watching the three officers.
"You going to open that thing?" Jack asked. "I've been wondering what was in it."
He watched as Brian and McDonald gathered around Joe while Joe fumbled with the box's latch.
"I sure would like a cigarette," Jack groaned. "I wish I knew how Walt did that. I'm not much for cigars, but I'd even take one of those."
"Is it locked?" Brian asked.
Joe's fingers persistently worked on the latch.
"I don't think so."
The next moment, its lid popped open, and Joe redirected the beam of his flashlight into the box's interior. To his surprise, its contents glittered and sparkled. Jack leaned toward the now open box.
"What do we have here?"
"Damn," Joe muttered as he reached inside and pulled out what appeared to be a diamond necklace. He handed the necklace to McDonald and then reached into the box and pulled out a pearl necklace, which he then handed to Brian. Brian began to laugh. Jack stared at the diamond necklace.
"I recognize that."
Joe paused and looked up to Brian.
"What's so funny?"
"Danielle Bodman. Every time she turns around, she either trips over a dead body or falls into a pot of money."
Jack leaned closer to the open box, his body moving through Joe's. Peering into the metal container, he spied more treasure, precious gemstones and gold. Joe shook his head, looking seriously at Brian.
I don't get it.
The chief began to chuckle.
I see what you mean. If Danielle is Walt's heir, through her aunt's will, then this boat would belong to her.
Jack jerked his head up and looked at the chief.
Who is Danielle? Why would she own the Eva Aphrodite?
Brian handed the pearl necklace back to Joe and stood up, no longer kneeling by the metal box.
You have to admit, it's pretty damn funny. There's no reason to believe this treasure belonged to Walt Marlowe, Joe said. It probably belonged to the passengers, and they put it in the box for safekeeping. What, right before someone blew their brains out? Brian asked.
Jack stepped away from the three men. McDonald handed the diamond necklace to Joe.
Put it back in the box and let's take this to the station so we can have a better look. Impossible to see anything in here.
30 minutes later, the chief sat alone in his squad car, calling Danielle on his cell phone.
Can I come down now? Danielle asked when she answered the call.
I'm sorry, your talk with the ghost will have to wait. Something came up and I want to head back to the station with Brian and Joe. I'm waiting for someone to get here to keep an eye on the wreckage.
With the back of his hand, McDonald swept the pile of papers and random pens and paper clips to one side of his desk, making room for the metal box they had brought back from the Eva Aphrodite. Joe set the box on the cleared space as McDonald took a seat behind the desk. For a few moments, the three men, Joe and Brian standing, McDonald sitting, stared at the metal box. McDonald spoke first.
What's the first thing you notice? Looks pretty good for being in that boat for such a long time, Joe said. Not a single barnacle, Brian noted. Something else. I didn't notice it until Joe set the box down.
McDonald pointed to the cabinet in the corner of his office.
Joe, on the bottom shelf of the cabinet, bring me the metal box.
Joe frowned, but did as the chief instructed. He walked to the cabinet, opened it, and then looked on its bottom shelf. To his surprise, there was a metal box. It appeared to be identical to the one they had found on the boat. He reached down and picked it up, bringing it to the chief. He set it on the desk next to its twin.
Damn, you have a box just like it, Brian said in surprise. I picked it up a few weeks ago at Walmart.
The papers stored inside the chief's box shifted to one side as he turned the box upside down, making a rustling sound. On the bottom of the box, the words Made in China were stamped into the metal, and next to them was the Walmart price sticker. It hadn't been removed. After setting the box aside, the chief retrieved a pair of latex gloves from a drawer and slipped them on. Joe and Brian watched as he opened the box Joe had found. Gingerly, the chief removed the items from the container, setting them on the desktop. There were 4 necklaces, which included the diamond and pearl ones they had seen while still on the boat. There was also a pair of diamond cufflinks, a woman's ruby ring, and a man's ring. After placing all the items on the desktop, the chief picked up the man's ring again and had a closer look.
"It's a wedding ring," he said.
Tilting it to one side, he studied it for a moment.
"Looks like initials and a date engraved inside, but I'll need a magnifying glass."
Setting the ring back on the desktop, he turned his attention to the metal box. After closing the box's lid, McDonald turned it upside down. His attention riveted on the bottom of the box. He said nothing. Also speechless were Joe and Brian, who each moved to the desk to have a closer look.
I guess this means Danielle doesn't necessarily have a claim to this particular treasure, Brian muttered. What does this mean? Joe asked.
Simultaneously, he and Brian stood straight, no longer hovering over the desk. McDonald leaned back and studied the upside-down metal box.
I'd like to know how this got on board that boat.
Brian sat down.
For a brief moment, I started to wonder if maybe the remains we found weren't the original passengers and crew of the Eva Aphrodite. But considering the level of decomposition, I'd have to say what was in that box has nothing to do with the human remains we found on board. We need to get someone in here to look at this, the chief said.
He looked up at Joe.
Maybe that jeweler we brought from Astoria who looked at the missing Thorndike? You mean the fake Thorndike, Joe corrected.
Good bet this is stolen, Brian said.
It makes me wonder, Joe pondered.
Is it possible the Eva Aphrodite was brought to shore by whoever left this box on board? And for whatever reason was forced to leave the box behind?
Not sure how, since it doesn't have a working engine, Brian reminded him.
The chief leaned forward, studying the metal container.
We know one thing. Whoever left this on board didn't do it back in Walt Marlowe's day.
MacDonald reached for the box they had found on the Eva Aphrodite, his fingertips lightly touching what remained of the water-faded Walmart price sticker, still affixed next to the Made in China stamped into the metal. 9. Danielle sat in the parking lot of the Frederickport Museum. Ever since MacDonald had suggested that Walt might have been responsible for murdering those people, she wondered what Ben from the museum had told the chief. When she returned to Marlowe House after leaving the beach, Danielle didn't mention anything to Walt about what the police had discovered after examining the skeletal remains removed from the Eva Aphrodite. She couldn't believe Walt was responsible for murdering those people, which also meant she didn't believe he knew they had been murdered. Before sharing with Walt what she had learned at the beach, she wanted to find out what Ben had told MacDonald. It wasn't as if she didn't trust Walt, but he had already withheld information about the Eva Aphrodite, and she wondered why. Getting out of her Ford Flex, Danielle slammed the car door shut and made her way to the front door of the museum. En route there, she remotely locked her car and then dropped her key into the front pocket of her purse. Pushing her way through the front doorway of the museum, she was greeted by a familiar docent, Millie Sampson. I was hoping to find Ben here, Danielle said after saying hello and following Millie into the museum gift shop.
Sorry, Ben won't be in today.
Drat. Do you know if he's at home? Danielle asked. Millie shook her head.
I doubt it. He mentioned something yesterday about going to Portland.
Danielle let out a disappointed sigh and leaned against the counter.
Maybe I could help you with something.
I just wanted to ask Ben about that boat that washed up over on our side of town.
Oh, the Eva Aphrodite, Millie said excitedly.
Have you seen it yet? Danielle asked.
Yes, I stopped by on the way here this morning. So exciting. I can't imagine where it's been all this time.
So you knew about the boat? I mean, before it washed up on shore?
Why, certainly.
Millie frowned as if Danielle had asked a silly question.
I sort of got the impression no one at the museum would remember the Eva Aphrodite.
Where did you get that notion? Millie asked. Before Danielle could answer, Millie said with a snide smirk,
Oh, I know Marie Nichols.
Excuse me? Danielle feigned ignorance. The last thing she wanted to do was get in the middle of whatever issue Marie had with the museum and its board of directors.
Marie is a friend of mine, but she likes to remind everyone how hers is the oldest family in Frederickport, which isn't true, of course. Ben's family has been here a long time, too. Sure, not as long as the Hemmings, but almost.
I'm not really sure what that has to do with the Eva Aphrodite.
Well, Marie likes to imagine she has the inside scoop on all that went on back then. You know, since her family used to live across the street from Marlowe House. But she was a baby when Walt Marlowe killed himself and...
Walt Marlowe was murdered, Danielle corrected.
Oh, that's right. I know you believe that, but I'm not really convinced.
Danielle frowned. Are you serious? I thought we all went over that. The old autopsy reports, what Emma Jackson told us. Certainly you aren't telling visitors to the museum Walt Marlowe killed himself.
I think our visitors should be given all the information.
Given all what information? Millie reached over and patted Danielle's hand. Don't look so vexed, dear. Walt Marlowe has been dead for 100 years. 90 years, Danielle corrected. Okay, 90 years. All I'm saying, I don't think he'll really care what we say at this point.
Maybe he won't, but I will, Danielle snapped. And as a member of the Historical Society, I assumed the museum gave out factual information.
Certainly we do. I didn't mean to imply we make up stories. I'm just saying we feel it's important to give our visitors all the information.
Which is that for the last 90 years, it was believed Walt Marlowe hanged himself in the attic of Marlowe House. Yet some people seem to believe that he may have been murdered by his brother-in-law.
I think it's a little more than some people believe. I'd say it's been proven.
Millie shook her head.
But I don't know how you can say that, Danielle. Perhaps you should attend a few of our meetings. After all, you are a member. A few months ago, we had the most interesting debate about Walt Marlowe's death, and most of those in attendance disagreed with your assertion.
They're wrong. Danielle could feel her blood pressure rising.
It all makes for an interesting debate, and really, dear, you should be more willing to listen to opposing views.
Danielle suddenly regretted coming to the museum. She felt a headache coming on.
As for the Eva Aphrodite, a few of us were discussing that just last month. Ben was digging into our archives when he came across some information about Walt Marlowe's yacht and how it supposedly went down in a storm.
Supposedly? According to Marie's father, there was a terrible storm that night.
True, but I guess there's more to the story than a bad storm. The passenger list, for example, included one of the wealthiest men in Portland, and his wife, according to rumors, Walt Marlowe's mistress.
Danielle stared at Millie, dazed.
Are you suggesting Walt was having an affair with a married woman?
Not just any married woman.
But I don't have all the details. Ben is the one who's been doing the research.
What kind of research? Danielle asked.
I know he went through the old newspapers, the ones we have from that period when the Eva Aphrodite went down. And then he has the diary that was donated a few months back.
What diary?
It was from an estate sale in Portland, Millie explained. When they were going through the items to sell, they came across a diary written by a Frederickport resident from the 1920s. They donated it to the museum and Ben's been reading it, cross-referencing the information.
This diary, that's where this information is coming from about Walt Marlowe and a married woman?
Marie nodded. He managed to verify much of the information by old newspaper articles. Did you know at the time the Eva Aphrodite disappeared, Walt Marlowe's business partner took off with a fortune?
Fortune?
Danielle remembered what Walt had said about Jack's theft, yet she didn't consider a couple $1,000s a fortune.
Yes, the two ran a moonshine operation. In fact, we plan to devote an entire section of the museum to Walt Marlowe's dark past.
Dark past? Danielle frowned.
He was a bit like a pirate, don't you think? It will be wonderful for the museum. Such a colorful attraction.
Not sure I see Walt Marlowe as some sort of pirate. And according to Marie, Walt's partner did take off with some money, but hardly a fortune. From what I understand, it was about a couple $1,000s. I imagine back then it might have been considered a fortune, but not now.
Is that what Marie told you? Millie chuckled.
I guess she doesn't know as much about Marlowe history as she thinks.
No, Marie didn't tell me that. Walt Marlowe did.
Why do you assume it was a fortune?
Because it was all gold coins.
Gold coins?